The following paid program is sponsored by Prairie Fire Communications. Opinions expressed do not necessarily represent those of staff and management of WRMN Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Freedom Rings. I'm your host, Kenneth John. With me is my excellent producer, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you today?
I'm doing fine.
Good, good.
Fine. Another football season has ended.
I'm happy it's over.
Yeah.
It culminated with a good two teams playing a really good game, and now that it's over, I can look forward to baseball season.
Oh, there you go. No basketball, huh? You skip that.
Basketball and hockey, they're okay. They're not my favorites, but baseball and football, my number one and two.
Yeah. It was a good game last night, and Green Bay did, I think, the better team won.
Well, yep.
At least the one that made the least amount of mistakes.
Well, I think the play of the game was that fumble, that forced fumble. Yep, that was it.
And Mendenhall was having a great game. And I was waiting for them to say, you know, they refer to a lot of players and where they come from, especially when they're really good rookies. I never heard them once say that outstanding rookie from Illinois.
No, they said it a couple times.
Did they? I missed that.
Yep, they said it a couple times. Absolutely, they said it.
Oh, good. Well, that's good. I felt bad for him that he did fumble. But he got hit hard.
He did. It was a forced fumble. It wasn't a mistake. He got hit hard.
He got hit real hard, and that's why I think, I mean, and for other plays, too, I think it's so typical who they give the most valuable player to. It's almost always the quarterback.
I tell you what, before that play, Mendenhall was my MVP of the game. And before that, before he fumbled that ball, in fact, 5 minutes before that, I told my wife, he's the MVP. He's the most valuable player of that game.
He was playing great.
He was.
What I'm referring to is Matthews.
Oh, Clay Matthews?
Yes.
Yeah.
He plays an outstanding game all the time.
Oh, you're not kidding.
Defense, I think the defense won the game for Green Bay.
He said it when the game was over, and he wasn't just tooting his own horn, but I agree with him. That was a defensive game.
Absolutely. And I think Rodgers had some great passes, but he was off on occasion, too.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
And as much as I respect that guy, I thought Matthews really deserved it. He's really the leader, especially with Woodson out.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Defense.
Absolutely.
And, he played another outstanding game, and that hit, which created the fumble, was key.
Yep.
To Green Bay's win. Absolutely. That was the turning point of the game.
It was a game changer. Everything was going Steelers' way up to that point.
So, but a good game, and I'll have to say my prediction was, I think I said last week they'd win by three or more. And then a couple days ago, saying between 3 and 7. So I feel like I got it right for once.
Well, everyone who knows me knows that my predictions are always wrong. So, of course, I picked Pittsburgh by 6.
Oh.
So, yep. And if you ever hear me picking a team, go the exact opposite of what I said, you'll be just fine.
All right. Let's move on to the stupid regulation of the week. And that will be, it's always easy to do a stupid regulation of the week just by looking at seeing what the state legislature is up to these days. And you would guess, you know, that they're probably spending 110% of their time trying to get the state out of bankruptcy, you know, slash spending and taxes. Of course, they raise taxes. They'd never do that. But if you thought that, of course, you'd be wrong. At least State Senator Ed Maloney, somebody referring to him as Baloney, I guess, what he is up to, he's part of the some education subcommittee, I guess, or something like that. He thinks, what's really important these days is regulating, he wants to register homeschoolers and home and his parents of homeschooling with the respective local school boards. And, you know, the thing is, Illinois, there's not much we can toot the horn about Illinois as far as individual freedom is concerned. Very few freedoms, maybe a right to ride a motorcycle without a helmet, and real little hassles about educating your children at home. And I guess Maloney wants to change that. He wants to make it more difficult. The problem with registering your kids with the local school boards from my viewpoint, is what history has repeatedly shown, is that registration always evolves into regulation, licensing, control of curriculum, control of discipline, control of the physical plan. You know, you don't have a fire preventative with water. It's the senior moment happening again. Sprinkler system.
Hey, there you go.
Sprinkler system. You know, you don't have that, let's say, which is, you know, required in the government school system. That sort of thing.
Well, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Isn't it important for us to regulate our children's education? I mean, wouldn't you think that, don't you somewhat believe that that is a regulatory, shouldn't you regulate that?
Well, you know what? The school boards have been doing such a great job, haven't they?
Well, at least we...
Why should the homeschoolers who consistently test out better, get into college at a better rate, stay in college at a better rate, graduate at a better rate, it's consistent. I don't have any home education, but I believe in it. Why should home educators... be regulated from a system of mediocrity?
What about the ones that are falling through the cracks, Ken?
Which ones are falling? Because there's a lot less falling through the cracks in the home education system.
But there's still some
falling through the cracks in the...
True.
You don't... No, not really, not many. I mean, you're arguing for a perfect world that doesn't exist. What I'm suggesting to you is if you start regulating them, then they're just going to, it's going to drag the home education system down to the level of the government school system.
Sure.
I think some people try, and you might be playing devil's advocate, but people who advocate regulation, I think sometimes they let the perfect get in the way of good. You're never going to have a perfect society, and I would suggest regulation makes it worse in almost every instance, if not every instance. Government regulation does, and in this instance in particular, I think the facts are out there, proven, and allow the parents to do what you know. If they want to teach their own, let them teach their own without regulation. The only thing I would say, of course, is not necessarily even have to do with education. If there's credible evidence of abuse going on in home environment, obviously that should be investigated and dealt with. But beyond that, no. I think government has proven to do a horrible job in educating children. And if anything, they should be looking to. I think the government should be looking to ways that people can more easily educate their children or set up their own private schools that through let's say tuition tax credits, maybe a voucher system. If we could do so without regulating. Hmm. That's the private schools, but I think what we have with the government educational system is mandatory 10 years of prison for children, that regiment them, that indoctrinate them, and that set up a system of these cliques that develop at schools. All the horrible, not only lack of real academic education, but all the horrible social consequences that come with the government school system. Not everybody fits into the mold the narrow mold that government schools try to fit into fit children into in the government education system. And I think everybody's diverse. People are diverse. Parents are diverse. They have their own moral value system, and I think parents have the right to teach their own moral value system and what they consider the academics, what's best for their children, much better than the government schools. You start letting the governments regulate, and it will not stop, Mike. It will not stop. It will just worse and worse. That's just one man's opinion.
Yep, well put.
All right, we are going to have a guest today, and it's David D'Amato. He will talk about... we're going to talk more about the Middle East, especially about Egypt, what's happening there, and we will do that after we break for a few messages.
You get what you pay for.
Efficient, high-quality service from Perfect Painting and Decorating. In business under the same name since 1975, Perfect Painting and Decorating supplies superior service for both interior and exterior painting, decorative finishing, wallpapering, plastering, drywall and taping, and wood refinishing. For your decorating needs, Perfect Painting and Decorating can custom tint right on the job site. Imagine no interruptions, thorough preparation, professional tradesmen, top-of-the-line materials, meticulous cleanup. Get the job done right the first time. It may cost a bit more for quality, but it's worth it. For a free estimate, call Perfect Painting and Decorating at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974. You'll be glad you did.
Are you politically homeless? Are you tired of being taxed and regulated by the Democrats? Or regulated and taxed by the Republicans? Would you like to pursue your own dreams without the interference of government? Well, then America's most successful upcoming party, the Libertarian Party, is your political home. The Fox Valley Libertarian Party is your local libertarian group working hard to restore the freedoms of our country once held dear. Yes, you can fight City Hall and win. We did. Find out how. With your help, we will make the 21st century the century of liberty for all. We hold monthly meetings at Diamond Jim's Gas Grill, 325 Meyer Avenue in East Dundee, at the corner of Meyer and Barrington Avenues, on the last Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m. Call 847-426-1974 for more information. That's 847-426-1974. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
I consider trial by jury as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution. So said Thomas Jefferson. What does this mean? Nothing less than that a juror has more power in a particular case than a judge, congressman, or president, and can judge the law. A juror has the right and power to nullify unjust law by voting not guilty, contrary to the jury instructions that many judges routinely give that jurors must apply the law as given by the judge. This is a very important check on the power of oppressive government. In the past, jury nullification has asserted its historical importance concerning fugitive slave laws of the 1850s, prohibition in the 1920s, and draft cases in the 1960s. Oppressive gun laws, tax laws, and drug laws where the people through its jury said no to government. For more information, call the Illinois Fully Informed Jury Association at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974.
All right, we are back with Freedom Rings, and I'd like to welcome to the program David D'Amato. David, how are you doing?
I'm great, Ken. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I appreciate you being on. You're with the Center for a Stateless Society.
You got it.
What's a stateless society?
A stateless society is a society where all interactions between individuals are completely voluntary and consensual, a society without the parasitic political class that we've come to identify as a feature of the society that we live in. It's a society without the state superimposed on it, without just arbitrary theft and crime.
So you believe in chaos, then, I understand, right?
I would definitely not describe anarchy as chaos. This is definitely a popular misconception.
Yes, I believe it is.
It's what we believe in is a society where the law would come about organically through kind of in a common law way through the customs and practices of people without being declared by fiat by a small group of people who have a monopoly on providing services such as justice and protection. And so we definitely don't believe in chaos. We believe in a centric type of law where we have numerous sources all competing for free consumers who aren't rack-rented in the type of way that we are and forced into buying services from an institution that is largely useless to free people.
Well, it sounds great, and we'll probably have to devote another program talking about that.
Yeah.
Because questions about that. What's to prevent the Hatfield Protection Association, you know, warring with the McCoy Protection Association, and
right,
and will that, you know, end up just being, you know, fiefdom thuggery? But that is for an argument for another day. We'd like to do that. Let's talk about what's happening in the Middle East, particularly in Egypt. The Middle East could be on the cusp of something revolutionary. It could be, if you listen to the neoconservatives, could be on the cusp of Islamic Brotherhood over the world eventually, or not. What do you see happening there?
Well, what's going on in Egypt is, to me, really encouraging for a couple of reasons. The first being that the protesters have been almost uniformly peaceful. This is a popular movement that's nonviolent, and it's taking place outside of what we think of as the proper channels that we're supposed to respect and defer to. That is the political process. I see this. It could go in a number of directions right now, but I see this as a step in the organic process, coercive institutions of the state with voluntary ones. And that would truly serve the needs of people.
At least they'll move in that direction. And maybe spawned by a spontaneous order of the World Wide Web.
Yeah, you got it. And I've actually dedicated a lot of interest in that area. I definitely see the internet as kind of fostering this open source mentality where it's kind of hard for... It's becoming really difficult for the state to impose an orthodoxy, a political and ideological orthodoxy on people because it's so easy for them to get out there in the web and explore different ideas that kind of flout the state's process. And this is, I think we're seeing some of that in the streets of Egypt right now.
Well, of course, fortunately, a few days ago, you had the counter demonstrators. It seems like they were just... initiated by probably just by the government, and they created some violence there. The military actually kept, I think, things from getting worse there. And there are some who say the only road to freedom is for with a peaceful transition might be for the military to be in control for a while. What's your view on that?
The way that I look at that is I definitely don't think that any sort of violent military coup or storming the palace, so to speak, I definitely see that as the way to bring out a free society. And that's why it is so encouraging to see that the military has largely stayed out of this, and I hope they continue to stay out of it, because I think that, like I said, if the military were to get involved, I think part of the reason why they're avoiding... in any involvement is because it really would look so heavy-handed to the rest of the world, and it's good to see that this is kind of a revolution truly from the ground. It's not a revolution that's being begun within a small group of military elites. It's kind of a really organic, like population-driven movement.
It sure seems to be that way, and my point is that I'm not talking about a military coup. It just seems to me that the military right now is actually, they actually are peacekeeping forces. They're keeping you know, the tinderboxes down a little bit, and it's not a professional military. Evidently, from what I understand, it's conscripted, which you and I as libertarian types would be vehemently opposed to. But there might be some benefit there in this instance, that it may be an army more of the people, and so maybe they don't want to turn on their own people.
Right, yeah. Well, I think you hit on it there. I think, ironically, the fact that this is a conscripted military is kind of, in a weird way, it's promoting the peace that we see, because for most of these people, they didn't want to be in the military. Their friends and family are the protesters, and this is something that they probably in their hearts agree with and they want to be a part of. So I don't think that they're not a professional military, and I don't think that they'd be quick to draw up arms against their friends and family.
Yeah, it almost feels more like a militia style than the state's military in a sense. And it brings to mind, and again, I'm not saying I'm in favor of the draft, but
yep.
There always seems to be a big name libertarians seem to have one bugaboo about, you know, that runs contrary to doctrine, if you will. And I believe Ludwig von Mises was in favor of a draft. And maybe it pauses one to think if, you know, in this instance, well, maybe he knew something that we don't know. I'm just, you know, questioning, you know, outwardly what's going on in my mind, because again, it runs contrary to what libertarians believe in. You know, it's force. You're forcing somebody in the military, but there are those aspects there that seem to be positive.
Right, and that does raise important questions. But I think ultimately, all the perceived benefits of having a draft where, you know, all of the population is somehow invested in the freedom of the country, and I guess that would be the theory. But I think that all of these can be accomplished without the slavery of conscripted military. I think if we had a free society where people were, you know, stakeholders in the society and agreements were voluntary, then we would have. I mean, you noted militias, and without a standing army, and with a well-armed citizenry, you'd still have opportunities for people to band together in defense, and I think you'd have much better and safer results with
right.
that kind of voluntary militia versus a conscription army where no one really wants to be there, and it's really just the most base form of slavery.
So do you think, can Egypt become a stateless society from this point? Or is it something that has to evolutionarily developed over, you know, decades, centuries, millennia?
Well, Egypt can't become a stateless society out of this. I don't think out of this particular scenario that Egypt could just develop kind of very quickly into a stateless society. I think part of the biggest challenge for creating a stateless society is really the education aspect of it. You can't have these institutions function properly without some level of education. That said, what we don't need is for everyone to start calling themselves revolutionary market anarchists or agorists or market anarchists. Really, the institutions that are going to become the stateless society, Egypt and elsewhere, are going to have to take place within the cracks of the state's ability to enforce its arbitrary laws at this point. So this is an important step in the right direction, but I don't think
right.
that...
Right, okay. Yeah, moving towards a peaceful, anarchic, effective society is an evolutionary process, and you
right.
mentioned education, and hand-in-hand with that, I would say, is developing a culture of freedom. And that's something that takes a long time, and that's something the neoconservatives have never learned. They think you can just by force impose a democratic will on people in the Middle East, and all of a sudden, then they're going to become a magical democracy. It's an absurd concept.
Yeah, it's a complete absurdity that you could, like you said, impose by force values. Values, like you said. They come from a philosophy, and they come from a culture that is amenable and accepts the fundamental tenets of the free society. And right, that does not come through bombs or tanks or the like.
Right, and bombs and tanks and tear gas canisters that are being hurled around in Egypt to have the letters USA marked on them. The American government, the taxpayers, give, a few billion dollars a year to Egypt for the last 30 years. And it's a wonder that the population doesn't completely hate Americans when they, You know, they see the police state that they've experienced over these past 30 years and more are so to such a great extent funded by the American government. Go ahead.
I mean, that's just it. There, what the American political class realizes is that because of that, any popular or democratic movement that takes place in Egypt or elsewhere in the Middle East is by definition going to be anti-American. But I think that people in the Middle East implicitly, if not explicitly, understand that there is a difference between regular American people and the American political class.
Right.
And so the true divide is the state is an expert at pitting people from different arbitrarily drawn up geographical areas against each other in war. But I think that the people in the Middle East understand that this is really a war between them and their political class, and us and against our political class, and really regular working productive people all around the world are actually, you know, should definitely be allies against these parasites. And this is what's meant, I think, by, in my mind, the phrase "no war but class war." And I think that has some use for libertarians too. Just the idea of a political class versus a productive class.
This our country has developed into such a dichotomy, but unfortunately the productive class is becoming fewer and far between, and what you've got is developed as this crony capitalism. It's taken over the so-called two major parties, which is really one party. It's the corporatist party, in my opinion.
Yep.
The small businessman who's got a better mousetrap, instead of, you know, being able just to go out putting out his sign and getting people knocking at his door, instead have the regulators and the tax man doing that, knocking at his door, and the crony capitalists don't competition, or, you know, to a certain extent don't have that competition to deal with from the upstarts, because the upstarts make it so difficult in this country. I know.
Yeah. And you're hitting on a really, really important point. We have kind of a myth in this country that that big government and big business are at loggerheads, but we need to divide kind of business into a couple categories at least, and one is what you're talking about, small business people and upstarts who don't get the advantages that big business gets to draw out of the state's, you know, trough, and they don't enjoy the subsidies, the captive markets, and these people are suffering because of the way that the state has cartelized the economy for big business. So it's
absolutely, and it's not just from the federal level. It's and I know we're getting off the Middle East here a little bit, but I think it's an interesting topic. Locally, you have these TIF districts, tax increment financing districts, that are given up to the likes of Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that small businessman on Main Street, how's he gonna compete with Walmart that doesn't even have to pay the property taxes for 20 years?
And it's going to be increasingly difficult for the small business person to compete in this corporatist, as you called it, rightly so, economy. But I think that the way to do it is, in the critical insight of Samuel Edward Konkin, just to as much as possible operate within black and gray markets. Now, this is not to say that people should actively put themselves at risk, but this is just to say that the economic system does not depend on the state. Now, it's controlled and, like I said, cartelized by the state, but it happens independently. So as much as possible for business people now, and we talked about the Internet, this is bringing producers together with consumers in a way that we've never really been able to imagine before. So this is going to ultimately be the way for small business people and the real productive class to operate within those intervening spaces.
And to reconnect with what we're talking about, which is the Middle East, what you you know, people say, well, we need to be involved in the Middle East because of oil. We need to get the oil from them. And my answer to that is always, or my question is, what are these horrible people going to do if they kick out the American corporations? Are they going to start drinking the oil?
Right, right. And that's exactly, that's exactly right. It's, you're not going to, the crisis situation that we envision if we have these countries finally get out of the States kind of neo-colonialism with our corporate economy being exported through the military,
right,
is definitely not something that is a disaster situation for the average American. Like you said, the oil's still there, and people still want to sell, and people still want to consume. Like I said, economic activity does not depend on the state, but the state wants very much for us all to believe that everything will spiral into chaos if it's not controlling and tweaking the levers of the economy.
And the military congressional industrial complex that's what they do, is they keep out those fears there to keep themselves going. We don't have to be buying from the corporate giants. We could be buying from whoever they're going to sell the oil. And of course, it seems to me probably at a lot cheaper prices because the military intervention of the U.S. is one reason why oil prices do spike.
Yeah, it's a huge reason why we pay the prices that we do for oil today. And like you said, in all likelihood, when you separate and diffuse the power through the economic system rather than give a handful of giant corporations with massive subsidies who don't pay any of their costs because we do as the taxpayers, ultimately you are going to see much cheaper prices. What they want, what these companies want, is high prices. And the Congress is more than willing to comply with huge barriers to entry and preferential treatment that really does make our costs go way up as the consumer, and they like that. Like I said, they want a captive market. They want a situation where we have nowhere else to go.
So I guess I could probably assume that you would be in favor of the U.S. government doing nothing as far as this current crisis in Egypt, and except maybe getting rid of the subsidies to the Egyptian government.
I don't think there's a role for the United States government except for exactly to just stop giving our money away to a dictatorship, and for maybe for Secretary Clinton to stop insisting that Mubarak stays in office. It's really pretty vulgar, but it shows exactly how the political class across boundaries sticks right together, and it has nothing to do with Arab or American or cultural, linguistic divides. It has very much to do with a class of political cadres worldwide, and they will stick together when the chips are down.
Yeah, I'm not sure who said this. Somebody once said that what foreign aid is taking from the poor of rich countries to give to the rich of poor countries.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, so, and that's
and Mubarak's got like 70 billion or $1 million somewhere in some bank accounts or whatever. Billion, I can't tell the difference anymore. But
right. Yeah, I mean, and this is such a great point because right now what we're seeing in Egypt, there's a small elite that benefits from this whole system, and they don't want to see it go away. And this is how it's always been. I mean, we think of this is the new colonialism, and we can think back to the old colonialism and the British Empire, and Indians in India did not want the small political elite of them did not want the British to leave, and so this is kind of an analogy to that, where almost all of the population is really sick and tired of getting built by this system of corruption, where Egypt operates as a fiefdom of the United States, but you do have a small entrenched and powerful class that wants to continue this.
Yeah, and it's the good old boy network that we all know at the local level of local corruption writ large on an international scale. We're talking with David D'Amato. The phone number here is 847 931-1410. That's 931-1410. Have any questions, comments, observations, perspectives, give us a call, and we will be back after a few messages.
We reduce children to their lowest common denominator.
57% of us are functionally illiterate.
For us, excellence is a thing of the past.
We killed the teachers and students at Columbine.
We are all trained to follow orders good.
We have learned to be tolerant of all people, except whites, Christians, and males.
27% of us are put on drugs.
The rest of us take the illegal ones. Two-thirds of us believe that from each according to his ability to each according to his need is part of the preamble to the U.S. Constitution.
7 out of 10 of us don't know either of the senators in our state.
We just placed 19th out of 21 countries on math scores, ahead of the Ivory Coast and Sri Lanka.
We elected
George W. Bush
as president
and re-elected him.
And 9 out of 10 of us are products of the public schools.
This message paid for by the Illinois Indoctrinators Association.
Hello friends, this is Kenneth John, and Freedom Rings needs your help. I would like to get back to a two-hour show, but that costs money. You can help by contributing to the Heartland Institute, Illinois' own libertarian think tank, with a tax-deductible contribution. The Heartland Institute is an independent, nonprofit research organization in operation for 17 years. Joseph Bast, Heartland's president, is a frequent guest on this program. 90% of what you contribute to Heartland comes back to Freedom Rings to pay for this ad. By contributing $25 or more, you will receive monthly publications including School Reform News, Environment and Climate News, and The Heartlander, the Heartland Institute's monthly newsletter. So please call 312-377-4000 to contribute and be sure to mention Freedom Rings. That's 312-377-4000. Or you can contribute by credit card on the internet by going to Heartland's website at heartland.org. Again, remember to mention Freedom Rings, and thank you for your support.
Ever think that you should be getting more out of your computer? Maybe you need a go-to tech guy. A go-to tech guy is somebody who knows computers inside and out and can help you with yours. John Spazieri is a real go-to tech guy. John Spazieri is a 20-year tech veteran who can help you get more out of your computer. Need software installed and configured? Call John. Want to learn word processing or Excel spreadsheets? Call John. John Spazieri comes to your home, works with you one-on-one on your machine, and shows you step-by-step how to do things you've always wanted to do with your computer. Want to upgrade your computer? Call John. Need to build a wireless network? Call John. Call John Spazieri at area code 630-858-6933. That's 630-858-6933. John Spazieri. Make him your go-to tech guy.
All right, we are back with Freedom Rings, and I have to make one correction on one of our ads there, on the Heartland ad. We've probably been running this ad for, I don't know, 8 years or something
as
like that.
As long as I've been around, for at least 3 years.
Yeah,
so.
It's been a lot longer than that.
Uh-huh.
And I just discovered that actually one of our listeners want to get the publications, but it's gone up. So okay. We got to change the ad, and I just want to announce to people, yeah, it's $100 or more now.
Okay.
It's, I don't know, over 8 years, there's, you know, 400% inflation or whatever. It's a change of policy. But it's $100 or more to get the publications. You can contribute whatever you want, but to get all those publications, $100 or more, folks. And we're going to eventually, from an Eastern philosophical viewpoint, it'll get done when it gets done, Danielson. But we'll get that ad fixed
at some point. Nice.
All right. Let's we're back. David, how about going to the phones?
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing today?
Hey, Dan.
Hey, this whole thing with Egypt and Middle East, and, you know, what do we have? Military presence, which I assume, depending on your point of view, may be just embassies or whatever with a very small Marine contingent or something. But don't we have that in something like 120 or 110 countries, whatever it is, around the world?
David?
Yeah, I mean, and that it's an important point. Right now, the United States is, like I said, succeeded past empires, and we definitely the military empire spread around the world. In the wake of World War One, and the Ottoman Empire was basically carved up into, again, tiny fiefdoms for the winners, and before that was the British, and now it's the United States, and we have a huge military empire that, like I said, exports our capitalist economy and our capitalist system, or I should say state capitalist, to make sure that, you know, we're being as clear as possible. But yeah, it's an important point. It's definitely
whatever 144 countries, something like that, and I think you add up the defense budget and it's greater than all the other defense budgets in the world combined. Yet Sean Hannity doesn't think we can cut anything out of defense.
I was just going to bring that up. I saw something the other day. We finally fell under spending as much as everybody else. We only spend 47% of the total world's expenditures on defense. So we don't spend quite as much as everybody else, but almost.
Okay.
Pretty close. But you know, it's what, $600 billion a year. In 10 years, that's only what, $6 trillion? I think that would take care of part of our budget deficit, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and right now we're calling it, you know, we call it part of our defense budget, but it would be great if everybody just started calling it the empire budget, because that's really what it is. And,
or offense, I mean, at least.
Yeah, exactly, offense. It's definitely an offensive system.
Part of the budget.
Yep, and it has nothing to do with defending any of our interests here.
Well, the other thing I wanted to bring up, too, Mubarak has been there for 30 years. I mean, he's been there almost as long as Daley's been in Chicago. but aren't we supposed to be the country that spreads democracy, not dictatorships?
We don't even practice it in this country, but...
Well, yeah, we don't practice it here either, but, you know...
Well, that brings us back to a point that I was making earlier, is any democratic movement in that region is going to be profoundly anti-United States government. They know what's going on, and they know that we're propping up these dictatorships, and that's why these groups like the Muslim Brotherhood are popular, and the president can say that they don't have a majority, but who does in that region? So that's kind of a red herring that he's throwing out there to divert attention from the fact that we are propping up these dictatorships, and the people in the region know it.
I have to laugh, David, when I hear the pundits and the politicians use the phrase "free and fair elections." And I just wonder, what do you think? Are they just that ignorant of what's going on in their own country, or are they that evil? are they that mendacious?
I wonder often myself, but I think ultimately these people who are part of our political class and part of our upper echelon corporate class, they've been drinking the Kool-Aid for so long that I actually do think that. The president and Secretary Clinton, I do think they believe that. But ultimately, this idea of political reform and democracy, this is just the fallacy that we can take their institution and make it work for us. The state can never be used for ordinary, working, productive people who just want to be left alone. It will never be possible to take that institution and make it a real populist institution. It's for the elite, and it's by the elite.
Dan, thanks for your call. Next, I believe we have Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hang on a second. Let me get rid of Dan first.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we're all set.
There we go. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, Ken. Hey, how are you doing today?
All right.
I just wanted to chime in on this whole thing in Egypt. You know, it's the darn if you do, if the devil you do, the devil if you don't, you know, because we got the devil we know right now in Mubarak. Love him, hate him, whatever. You know where he is. You know what side he's on. And, you know, my concern is we have these so-called free and fair elections, which are usually stolen by the side with the most guns, which will be the Muslim Brotherhood and the Iranians. And the next thing you know, we got Iran using Egypt as a satellite state, and they're going to be up to no good. And eventually, one of those weapons the Iranians are working on are going to find their hands into the right people, and New York's not going to have to worry about the Twin Center towers falling down. They're going to have to worry about most of downtown disappearing under a mushroom cloud, because you're dealing with fanatics like the Japanese and the Nazis of World War II. These people cannot be rationally dealt with. You're not going to be able to sit down and have a discussion with them on theory and freedom and whatever. They're just going to look at you as an infidel, and they want to slit your throat. So when that develops over there, you know, what are we going to do, sit back and wait till they nuke us?
What do you think, David?
Excuse me. I think, yeah, for sure. There are a small contingency of nuts who, no matter what we do, are going to want to kill Americans. But I think that part of the, I mean, a huge part of the reason why these radical groups are able to recruit people is because we're propping up dictators like Mubarak and spreading our military around the region. I don't think that, I mean, what could be a better recruiting video than the things that the president and Secretary Clinton have been bandying about on the cable news shows and in their interviews about the situation in Egypt? These are exactly the kinds of things that give crazies the opportunity to recruit people who are young, mostly men, uneducated. They don't understand what's going on, and all they want is kind of self-determination and autonomy, the same things everybody else wants. And they're preyed on and turned into suicide bombers or whatever they end up. And I definitely don't think that more imperialism is the solution to the terrorism problem.
Well, on the reverse side of that is, where is these so-called moderate Muslims that are out there denouncing these violent acts committed by these terrorist thugs? You don't hear from them because they're scared to death that if they speak out, they'll issue a fatah on them. Not only will they be killed, but their entire family will be slaughtered. So you don't have a rational basis, you know, to hear you have a discussion with these people. You know, it's like dealing with a rabid dog. You can sit there and talk to it all day long, but when it bites you, you're still going to get bit, and you're going to have rabies. So you can deal with it before it bites you, or you can deal with it after it bites you, but you're going to deal with it. So anyway, gentlemen, I enjoy the program. I'll keep listening.
Thanks for calling, Mike. Did you want to respond to that, David?
Yeah, just briefly. I think, yeah, he's got a great point. Ultimately, there are going to be crazies, but the point is we need to look at, we're not making apologies for these people, but we need to look at the causal link. We need to look at the causal chain and say, why are people able to recruit large numbers, or not maybe, if not large, then significant numbers of people to doing this? And I think the reason is U.S. imperialism. We can say that they hate us because we're free all day long, but there are a lot of free countries, and they don't see the kind of terrorist focus that we do here in the United States.
Yeah, when has Canada or Switzerland experienced any kind of terrorism?
Right, exactly. So that ends up being, that whole argument ends up being kind of a way for us to avoid the real problem, which is our military empire that no one wants. Regular people don't want it. And he said, you know, we never hear about or we never hear from these ordinary moderate Muslim people. Well, they're too busy working for a living. They're too busy doing things. And these nuts are out there kind of claiming to be the true Muslims, and everybody else is just kind of like, well, you know, what can we do? And I think that those people want just as badly for the United States to leave, but they're just not blowing themselves.
And you're not going to marginalize Islamic fascism when you continually kill innocent civilians through drone attacks and such.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The way, and that's the great point, is you're never going to be able to look at these terrorist organizations and say, we denounce this, when the United States military is the biggest terrorist organization in the world.
Absolutely.
It's, yeah, I mean, we're droning people to death in places like Pakistan that, you know, we never even hear that. We're too busy talking about Iraq and Afghanistan and the rest of our empire.
Where's the left? Where's the peaceful left criticizing Obama, the Obama administration, on these drone attacks?
Yeah, they're absent. And I think that the only vibrant anti-war movement in the United States right now is libertarians. I mean, look at a website like antiwar.com.
Right.
Yeah, the progressive anti-war movement is, it's a chimera. It exists in people's imagination. The left in this country has not been consistently anti-war. And to the extent that they are, they've had to, you know, go to outlets, like I said, like antiwar.com. I think there are some obviously principled anti-war progressives and kind of left liberals out there, but for the most part, the libertarians are the principled anti-war carrying the banner.
Right, and it works on both sides of the same corporatist political spectrum, Democrat or Republican. Or George
right.
W. ran on no nation building.
Right.
You know, and as soon as they get into power, something happens.
It's, yeah,
you know, power corrupts and absolute power feels really good or something like that.
and this brings us back to the idea that, you know, no matter what candidates say in elections, this institution has a way of operating, and it's the political corporate elite control it, and that's Democrat, Republican, whatever you want to call it.
Absolutely.
They're carrying the same banner.
All right, we've got a little, not much time, but Pete, Pete, you're on real quickly.
Yeah, I'll try and be as quick as possible. You mentioned that, you know, the United States is a free country, and much of the Islamic world has an animus towards it. Well, they don't have an animus towards, say, Western European countries. Could that be because the United States is the prime sponsor and ally of the State of Israel? And doesn't that explain a lot of what we've been talking about here, that the Muslim world views us as the prime instigator or the prime benefactor of the State of Israel, while Western Europe has sort of separated itself from Israel to greater or lesser degrees? And we mentioned the American left. Doesn't the American left, by and large, support the State of Israel?
David?
Yeah, I think that the United States support of Israel is a huge element in all of this, and it's very unpopular in the region, because whatever you think about the existence of the State of Israel or whether or not it should be there, or no matter where you come down in that question, in principle, the United States shouldn't have involvement in that and shouldn't be funneling money into Israel. Let the region do what it wants and deal with Israel the way it will, and I think that's a complicated question in and of itself, but no matter where you stand on that, I think that our support of Israel, blind support, no matter what they do, and you know, Egypt's tied up in that just from being our ally, too, and having the peace with Israel. So, yeah, that's enormously unpopular in the region, and it's a huge, again, recruiting tool for terrorists.
Pete, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, we will be back after a message or two.
By jury, as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution. So said Thomas Jefferson. What does this mean? Nothing less than that a juror has more power in a particular case than a judge, congressman, or president, and can judge the law. A juror has the right and power to nullify unjust law by voting not guilty, contrary to the jury instructions that many judges routinely give that jurors must apply the law as given by the judge. This is a very important check on the power of oppressive government. In the past, jury nullification has asserted its historical importance concerning fugitive slave laws of the 1850s, prohibition in the 1920s, and draft cases in the 1960s. Oppressive gun laws, tax laws, and drug laws are other instances where the people through its jury said no to government. For more information, call the Illinois Fully Informed Jury Association at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974.
All right, we are back. David, do you have any blogs or websites you'd like to push?
Yeah, everybody should definitely stop by the Center for a Stateless Society's website, and that's at c4ss.org, and also my website, firsttruths.com.
Very good. David, thanks so much for being on the program today.
Thanks a lot for having me. Great time.
All righty. All right, quotation of the week. This is from Albert Einstein. Unthinking respect for authority is the greatest enemy of truth.
The preceding paid program sponsored by Prairie Fire Communications.
This is the home of the most amazing show on the radio. The Radio Shopping Show.
WRMN, AM 1410, Elgin.
He tried to separate two groups at a house party. 11 others were injured. Two suspects have been arrested. Kasich is planning to meet today with the university's president and Youngstown mayor to discuss the incident. Final results are expected today from Southern Sudan's referendum on independence. Sudan's president says he'll back the results, which are showing a landslide vote in favor, and he wants to be the first to congratulate the South on their new state. President Omar al-Bashir pledged Sudan would aid the South in any way possible. This is IRN, USA Radio News.
What bothers you most about menopause? Is it the hot flashes? Waking up at night drenched in sweat? How about the mood swings or putting on weight? Tens of thousands of women have turned to Ambaren to get relief from their menopause symptoms. Will Ambaren work for you too? The only way to find out is to give it a try. That's why we're giving every woman who calls today a complimentary risk-free trial of Ambaren with a 30-day supply free. Ambaren is all natural and its safety and effectiveness is backed by published clinical studies. Do you want a life without hot flashes, night sweats, or mood swings? Want to lose weight, sleep great, and have more energy? We've made trying Ambaren completely risk-free, and you get a 30-day supply free. All you have to do is make the call. To claim your complimentary risk-free trial of Ambaren, visit GetAmbaren.com.